Hello, my friends. It's Tuesday, April 1st, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We've got quite the show for you today, and don't worry, there are no April Fool's pranks in today's show. I learned my lesson about that back in my marijuana podcasting days, way back during the George W. Bush administration. I opened an April 1st podcast by announcing that overnight, George W. Bush had signed an executive order immediately legalizing marijuana throughout the United States, and let me just say, I got some feedback on that. So I kind of learned my lesson. Nothing but straight news reporting for you today. On the show today, we take a look at New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, who took the floor of the U.S. Senate last night. And I just checked, as of 6 a.m. Pacific time, he was still going. I understand he had a couple of others take the floor for him so he could take bathroom breaks and such. But Cory Booker is actually doing something. We'll give you some clips and talk about the effectiveness. We've got Donald Trump out there, the Mango Mussolini, once again batting around the thought of serving a third term. Of course, the Constitution says he can't, but, you know, the Constitution said he couldn't do a lot of stuff. So we'll talk about that. Then we go over the pond to France, where Marine Le Pen, the leader of the French alt-right movement, has been convicted of fraud and has been forbidden to run for office for 5 years. Wait, you can do that? What a great idea that is. We had a visit in the Oval Office from none other than Mr. Richie, that is Kid Rock, showed up at the White House. A lot of people asking, where's his suit? Then the big important vote for today on April 1st is in Wisconsin, where the Supreme Court balance is up for grabs. Brad Schimmel, the Republican candidate, or the conservative candidate, I guess we should say, up against Susan Crawford, the liberal candidate. And I've got a quote from Schimmel that should give all voters some pause. We'll also, of course, have our regular Boycott Idaho segment. I've got a double shot in Boycott Idaho today, a court decision and a new law that has been signed all about the children and abortion. So stay tuned for that. And to close out the show, a radical rant to tell you the horrific tale of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the man from El Salvador who was caught up in an administrative error, according to our administration. Oops, so sorry we captured you and sent you to a black prison overseas. Oh, sorry about that. All that's coming up on the Radical Russ Show.
Tonight, I rise with the intention of getting in some good trouble. I rise with the intention of disrupting the normal business of the United States Senate for as long as I am physically able. I rise tonight because I believe sincerely that our country is in crisis. And I believe that not in a partisan sense, because so many of the people that have been reaching out to my office in pain, in fear, having their lives upended, so many of them identify themselves as Republicans. Indeed, conversations from in this body to in this building to across my state, and recently in a travel across the country, Republicans as well as Democrats are talking to me about what they feel is a sense of dread about a growing crisis, or what they point to about what is going wrong, that bedrock commitments in our country that both sides rely on, that people from all backgrounds rely on, those bedrock commitments are being broken. Unnecessary hardships are being borne by Americans of all backgrounds. And institutions which are special in America, which are precious, which are unique in our country, are being recklessly, and I would say even unconstitutionally affected, attacked, and even shattered. In just 71 days, the President of the United States has inflicted so much harm on Americans' safety, financial stability, the core foundations of our democracy, and even our aspirations as a people for from our highest offices a sense of common decency. These are not normal times in America.
That's New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker, who took the floor of the United States Senate last night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And we're closing in on 14 hours or so that he's been up there, with a couple of breaks given by other senators taking his place for just a brief moment. But for the most part, he's been up there for over 14 hours now, giving speeches, reading letters from his constituents, and making the overall case against the fascism we're living under the Trump administration. And there's a lot of response to this online. Some folks are a little skeptical of this. Somebody I follow and respect quite a bit, Oliver Willis online, who formerly worked with Media Matters and currently a Daily Kos writer, has kind of characterized this as another bit of Democratic kabuki theater. The idea being that, everybody's upset on the Democratic side. The Democratic brand is at 27% approval. Democrats are 9 points underwater with their own voters on approval rating here. 49% disapprove, 40% approve. So Oliver's of the opinion, and don't want to put too many words in his mouth, but just checking from his post this morning, that this is just performative. This is kabuki theater. This is, once again, West Wing thinking, where Democrats just put on a show without putting any substance behind it. And I can understand that point of view, because, they've been calling this a filibuster, but it's not really a filibuster. A filibuster is when you talk and talk and talk to prevent a vote from happening. This isn't the same deal. There is no vote actually happening. This is just Senate business. And so he's not filibustering a law or stopping anything from getting passed. However, I do think there is some value to this. I don't think that it's just kabuki theater. First of all, doing something is doing something, even if it's only performative. At least it's nothing. Second of all, this is building a lot of media interest in what's going on. I'm seeing posts all over, people clipping out various portions of Booker's speech, and I'll give you some more clips as we continue the show. But right now, what's happening in the Senate? Are they putting forth any new nominees right now? Are they passing any new laws right now? Are they eviscerating any more parts of the Constitution right now? No? Then this is a good thing. Cory Booker has stopped the regular business of the Senate so far. This is the sand in the gears we've been talking about, about mucking up the regular business of the Senate. Now, while it's a good first start, I think there's a whole lot more that could be done. First of all, they could stop giving unanimous consent to proceed with normal business of the Senate. If you don't know, in the Senate, they have to have the agreement of all the senators to move forward. Normally, this is done through something called unanimous consent, which is just kind of a formality thing where they say, hey, we're going to move forward on this bill. Do we have unanimous consent to move forward? Yes, we have unanimous consent. All right, let's go ahead. Right? Rather than, do we have unanimous consent to start this bill? No. All right. Well, let's put it to a vote to see if we're going to move forward. This should be happening with everything. There should no longer be unanimous consent. There should no longer be this little hand wave of, okay, let's go on with business as usual, because it's not business as usual right now. By refusing to grant unanimous consent, that just adds more time, more procedures, and more opportunities to stall what's happening in the Senate. Similarly, the Democrats could be fighting all cloture votes. There should be a filibuster on everything. Filibuster everything. That includes all the nominees. It still blows my mind that some of these Senate Democrats, including Cory Booker on a couple of these, voted for Donald Trump's cabinet nominees. 99-0 in the case of Secretary of State Marco Rubio. So why? Why would you be giving any vote to any nominee of a convicted felon, adjudicated rapist, insurrectionist? The very fact that someone would take the job offer from Donald Trump should disqualify them right there. The fact that you'd hear from this convicted felon, fraud, rapist, and say, yeah, I want to work for him, should be an immediate dismissal. It should be immediate grounds for questioning your character. So there should never be any vote, any Democratic vote, for any of Donald Trump's nominees. And they could start holding shadow hearings. Start putting together your own hearings. They wouldn't be official. You probably wouldn't be able to have them at the Capitol. There's nothing stopping a group of senators from renting a room somewhere and calling witnesses and putting on a spectacle. Do you think the average person's going to care or know that, oh, well, this isn't an official hearing? Yeah, sure, Fox News will come out and say, oh, it's just the Democrats. Democrats putting on a show. It's all partisan. There's no Republicans. It's Democrats. So they do that anyway, even in the real hearings. So as far as I'm concerned, what Senator Booker is doing right now is a very good thing. And we need more Democrats to get in good trouble like Senator Booker. You may have heard some reports that Adolf Hitler out there is talking about running for a third term. Yeah, that's right. Donald Trump thinks that he's going to serve another term after this one, continuing from 2028 and beyond, at which point he'll be, what, 82, 83? He'd be 86 or so by the end of that alleged third term. And I see a lot of reports out there, a lot of commentators on social media saying, don't be distracted by the shiny object. This is just Trump trying to distract everyone from the signal issue, from the whiskey leaks. It's just a distraction. Pay it no mind. The Constitution is clear. The 22nd Amendment's text is very clear that the president can only serve two terms. He's constitutionally ineligible. The little trick of trying to run for vice president and then Vance be president and then resign and make Trump president, that won't work either. It's just a trick. It can't happen. Folks, it could happen. You need to understand something. Donald Trump is very aware of how the end of dictators' lives go. Dictators either die in office or die in prison. Those are the two choices. And Donald Trump is well aware of this. He was lucky to get away with not going to prison after losing his first election. And after he lost his first election, what did he do? He threw an insurrection. Don't think he won't throw this country into civil war before he gives up the Oval Office again. You know it, I know it, he knows it. Those are his only options. And for the people out there that say the text is crystal clear, the 22nd Amendment bars anyone from being president more than two terms, I would ask you, how crystal clear did you think the 14th Amendment Section 3 was? Because that seemed pretty crystal clear to me. No one who had previously sworn an oath to defend the Constitution, who then commits an insurrection against it, can be in office, any office or public trust in the United States. The historical relevance of it was clear, barring insurrectionists after the Civil War. The modern interpretation was clear. An insurrection clearly happened. It had been adjudicated in a few courts that had convicted some of these January 6th rioters. So it was crystal clear, the 14th Amendment, Section 3, until Colorado tried to actually enforce it, and the Roberts Court said, oh, no, that doesn't count. We can't, because it's not self-executing, because nobody actually said there was an insurrection, despite the fact that the 14th Amendment Section 3 said Congress can remove this disability by two-thirds vote. Why would they have the ability to remove something that wasn't automatic? So, clearly, the Constitution only means what five justices on the Roberts Court says it means. Roe v. Wade was settled law, remember that? Settled law. Well, we'd never do anything about that, and what do you know? No more Roe v. Wade. Constitution's also pretty clear about not accepting foreign emoluments. The president cannot profit from his office. How did that crystal clear part of the Constitution work out? Yeah. So folks, don't look away from this talk of a third term. He is absolutely serious about it. And if he can't find a way to do it through his corrupt Supreme Court, if he can't find a way to do it that way, he will find a way. There will be violence. There will be a refusal to leave. Whatever it might be, don't think he's going away just because he lost an election. Before we move on to our next story, let's check in with Senator Cory Booker.
America, we are not doing a good job right now. We read the section about medical debt. Tens of millions of Americans are saddled with medical debt. 66% of the people that declare bankruptcy is because they can't afford their medical bills, because something that happened to them could happen to us and our families. My mother, my brother, and I have a lot of challenges, a lot of problems, but we weren't saddled with a rare disease.
Yes, Senator, keep getting into that good trouble. We love what you're up to. All right, taking a look at international news from France, Marine Le Pen, who is the far right leader of her political party, has been convicted of fraud and has been barred from running for office for the next 5 years. Wow, what a fantastic idea that is. Yeah, apparently the fraud had to do with some embezzlement of funds from the European Union. And because of this fraud conviction, the courts have ruled that she is ineligible to run for office for the next 5 years, which puts a real kink in her plans, because I guess those French elections were coming up pretty soon and she was doing okay in the polls. And this just brings me to the whole subject of holding powerful people to account, because the more this goes on with Trump in our White House, the more obvious it seems that we've got a real problem in this country holding the powerful to account. We worship at the altar of celebrity and wealth far too much in this country. When you look at France convicting Le Pen, barring her from office, you look at South Korea, where their President Yoon, on December of 2023, he declared martial law, and then within a few weeks, he was being ousted from the presidency and now being held to account, put on trial. We see the same thing in Brazil, where Jair Bolsonaro, the Trump of the tropics, they called him, he had his supporters commit an insurrection after his loss in the election of 2022. He's being held to account. He's being arrested and tried. So it can happen in Brazil, it can happen in South Korea, it can happen in France. Three different continents here. We just can't get it to happen here on the North American one. And there's a lot of talk about Merrick Garland shuffling his feet, refusing to even begin investigating Trump for over a year after the insurrection. There's reporting out of the Washington Post that showed that even a year into it, he only had like four people working on the case. They kept building the cases against these lower level insurrectionists, but refusing to go after the head honcho, refusing to go after Donald Trump. Only after he was pressured did he finally begin to move. And by then it was too late. By then everything was delayed, denied, the Supreme Court giving him an immunity ruling. There's people out there still defending Merrick Garland, and I can't understand why. It seems to me, when you have an insurrection so clearly fomented by the commander-in-chief, and then once it's happened, once the insurrection is happening, for him to stand by for 187 minutes, over 3 hours, with Republican senators and representatives calling him, please call off the mob, fearing for their lives, he did nothing. Total dereliction of duty for 3 hours. For the photos to come out of all the documents, our top secret documents, that put at risk the lives of our secret operatives, of our soldiers, our service members, to find those stacked to the ceiling in his crapper, and nothing happened from it? To have heard the phone call that he made to Brad Raffensperger in Georgia, trying to extort him, trying to strong-arm him to just find enough votes to be able to win. For this amount of brazen criminality to come out of the White House and for us to see no justice, to see no being held to account for such obvious and glaring crimes, just further erodes any trust we might have had in our justice system. We continually see the rich and powerful getting away with it. Whereas if you or I had inadvertently dropped some top secret stuff into our bathroom or a text chain or taken bribes, any of these acts that we see over and over again from the Trump maladministration happen to any of us, you know we'd be locked up in a second. I really believe that the Democratic Party could do worse than campaigning on nothing but judicial retribution, campaigning on finally holding the powerful to account, of finally making justice apply equally to all of us. That's the hunger that's out here. That's what we're all feeling, is that this is two Americas, to use the old John Edwards 2004 campaign theme. We live in two Americas. There's one for all of us, working class, regular folks. And then there's America for the people with two or three commas in their bank account and the skin that is white and delightsome. So let's start holding some of our powerful people to account, and let's stop coddling our Democratic politicians that refuse to stand up and hold these people to account. It's time to stop defending people like Joe Biden and Merrick Garland, who failed at the number one job Joe Biden was elected for. I truly believe that Joe Biden won, and won in somewhat of a landslide fashion, if you consider that he is the only president in over 50 years to have received more votes than people who did not vote. I've gone over this on the show a number of times. Every election since 1976, the proportion of the eligible electorate who did not vote is greater than either than the Republican or the Democrat got in that election, except for Joe Biden in 2020. I know a lot of that had to do with COVID and the rollout of extended voting by mail in a lot of states. I understand that a lot of states, especially southern states, are engaged in heavy voter suppression. But still, more people turned out as a proportion of the electorate. More people were concerned about the outcome and came out and voted for Joe Biden because Donald Trump had driven this country into a ditch. And the MAGA movement had poisoned our Constitution and our political body. And Biden was elected to expel that poison, to hold Trump to account, to bring us back to an era of normalcy. The number one thing, the number one item on the agenda for Joe Biden in 2021 should have been lock him up. Lock Trump up. But these old school Democrats can't do that. They can't get their mind around holding members of the opposition party to account for fear of it being, oh, it'll be political. It'll all be seen as partisan. They won't like us if they're seen as just being partisan, just attacking Republicans. Well, meanwhile, the Republicans seem to have built up a pretty solid base by doing just that, attacking Democrats all the time and always appearing partisan. There is no more era of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan sharing a beer after the congressional session is over. There is no more my colleagues and friends across the aisle. We're at war here with a fascist insurrectionist movement that has seized the White House through a coup. This is an ongoing coup. It's time for Democrats to recognize these are the enemy. They're not our fellow countrymen. They are Confederates. They are the descendants, the ideological descendants of Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis, wanting to resegregate this country, wanting to reestablish Jim Crow in this country, to put minorities and gays and women back in their place. They're not even shy about saying so. I've seen discussions going around about terminating the 19th Amendment. And they're going to do this through a backdoor channel. They're actually going to try this without actually repealing the 19th Amendment. There's an act out called the SAVE Act. And the SAVE Act is all about, well, we've got to make sure that illegal aliens aren't voting. We've got to make sure you're a citizen if you're really voting, despite the fact that illegal aliens aren't voting. It's a statistical nullity. It's not happening. But they want to prove, oh, you got to prove your citizenship, got to prove your citizenship. How are you going to prove your citizenship? With either a passport or your birth certificate. And guess what? About 69 million American women have a name that is now currently on the voter rolls different than their birth certificate name because they got married, they took on a married name. So these 69 million women, should this SAVE Act pass, would be instantly disenfranchised and have to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to prove, okay, here's my birth certificate. Now, here's my marriage certificate where my name was changed in the marriage certificate. And we're going to put women through all those hoops to try to vote in these midterm elections if the SAVE Act passes. And folks, if women can't vote in 2026, Republicans will take the House and Senate and they will increase their numbers in the House and Senate. I don't know if you've seen maps that show what would America, how would the vote have gone if only women could vote, or if only men could vote. America is a blue country if only women could vote. There are very few states that remain red states. Idaho, of course, is one of them, that remain red states if only women could vote. So they're serious. They want to take away women's right to vote. They want to put us back into the Jim Crow segregation era. They're not shy about saying so. Well, the clown show continues in the Oval Office with the appearance of Kid Rock standing next to Trump at the Resolute desk while he signs some executive orders. And a lot is being made about Kid Rock's outfit. Obviously, this is just an audio podcast. You could probably go look at the outfit if you Google it. But, oh my God, he's just, it looks like an American flag threw up all over him. He's wearing this all red outfit with stars and stripes across it and eagles. He looks like a clown. It's just ridiculous. And a lot of people are pointing out that, boy, the Republicans sure had a problem with Zelensky when he showed up at the Oval Office wearing just a black sweater. Boy, why can't you wear a suit? Why don't you have any respect for the office of the presidency? You got to come in some garish Elvis-like jumpsuit full of eagles and stars and stripes. And yeah, obviously it's hypocrisy, folks. Obviously it's hypocrisy. It's bad when we do it. It's okay when they do it. But that's not what I wanted to focus on with this Kid Rock appearance, because believe it or not, I'm kind of interested in what Kid Rock had to say in the Oval Office.
Anyone who's bought a concert ticket in the last decade, maybe 20 years, no matter what your politics are, knows it is a conundrum. You buy a ticket for $100, by the time you check out, it's $170. You don't know what you can charge for, but more importantly, these bots, you know, they come in to get all the good tickets to your favorite shows you want to go to, and then they're relisted immediately for sometimes a 400-500% markup. And the artists don't see any of that money. And, you know, ultimately, I think this is a great first step. I would love down the road if there'd be some legislation that we could actually put a cap on the resale of tickets. And I'm a capitalist and a deregulation guy, but they've tried this in some places in Europe, and it seems to be the only thing that's us as artists be able to get the tickets into the hands of the fans at the prices we set. I'll be the first one to say, and I know the president doesn't like when I say this, but I'm a little overpaid right now. It's kind of ridiculous. I would rather be, you know, a hero to working class people and have them be able to come attend my shows and give them a fair ticket price. I can't control that right now. So hopefully this is a step to really be able to make that happen.
So he's actually talking about the Ticketmaster Live Nation monopoly on arena seating and tickets and so forth for these artists. And the points he makes are valid as to how Ticketmaster has a monopoly control over this. They jack the prices up. They have all these junk fees that are added on. There are the bots that are automated to snap up the best tickets, and then they get resold and the price is jacked up and the artist doesn't see that, and et cetera, et cetera. But do you really get the gist of what Kid Rock is talking about here? Busting up monopolies and supporting price controls? You didn't expect to hear that coming out of the Trump White House, did you? And before I wrap this up, I did want to add this other little bit of biographical information about Kid Rock, whose real name is Robert James Ritchie. Bobby Jim. Robert James Ritchie. So Kid Rock is married. He proposed to his girlfriend, Audrey Berry, in 2017. He's a grandfather because he has a grown-up son, Robert James Ritchie Jr. His son is married to Kelly South Russell, and they had a daughter named Skye. Now, the interesting part here is his son's wife, Kelly South Russell, is Kid Rock's ex-girlfriend. So the ex-girlfriend of Kid Rock is the mother to his granddaughter. Yeah, a little fork in the family tree there, I guess. Once again, let's check in live on the Senate floor with Senator Cory Booker.
I've been going through section by section, as you pointed out, Social Security, section on health care, section on education and the Department of Education and that work that it does. I've been going point by point through. This is the agenda. I didn't know how much of I can get through. But we laid it out. We have binders for each one of these issues. Immigration, we went through. We have housing, the environment, farmers and food, veterans, the corruption that's been normalized by this president, the rule of law, public safety, all of the ways that we know that there is a crisis in our country, and we as a nation need to be more attuned to it and doing more to meet this crisis, to rise up and defend our country, defend our well-being. And all while things are happening that you know. You're the chairman of the Finance Committee. And you have these insights, we've talked about them, about what's about to happen in this reconciliation process. I mean, that's one of the most stunning things. It's almost immediate on this floor. I think we're going to see about the tariffs tomorrow and see how far the president will go. But we do know whatever it is, it's going to affect prices that are going to continue to go up for Americans. As inflation has continued to go up for Americans.
We'll check back in on Senator Booker before the conclusion of our show. Let's move on to the state of Wisconsin, where there is a huge vote taking place to determine the ideological balance of their Supreme Court, which is currently 4-3 liberal. One of the liberals is leaving office, so will be replaced by either conservative jurist Brad Schimmel, who is endorsed by Trump, or liberal jurist Susan Crawford, who is endorsed by Obama and everyone else on the left. And this is critically important because the state of Wisconsin could determine the balance of the House of Representatives in the 2026 election. Should Brad Schimmel win, Republicans would control that Supreme Court, and it would be letting the Republicans draw their gerrymandered maps again in the state of Wisconsin and perhaps shifting the balance more toward the Republicans. There's also a conflict of interest involved here, as Elon Musk has put about $20 million into this Wisconsin Supreme Court race, including handing out million-dollar checks to people who signed his petition and promised to vote. Wink, wink. And it really just, a lot of commenters have brought this up on social media. It's just, how American is it that you can be the richest man in the world, bribing people $20 at a time, $100 at a time, or million-dollar check at a time to vote for the candidate of your choice? But in the state of Georgia, if you try to hand water to someone standing in line, no matter who they're going to vote for, you'll be arrested. You can't hand out water, but you can hand out million-dollar checks. That's just so American, I can't think of anything more red, white, and blue. So Musk is out there trying to sway this election because he's got a personal interest in it. The state of Wisconsin has a law that allows that independent car dealers can sell any model of car. And of course, Elon Musk runs a car company called Tesla, and he'd prefer the law to allow Teslas to only be sold at Tesla dealerships. So he's got a personal stake in this as well. And when it comes to this Brad Schimmel guy, he made a comment the other day, just yesterday, that really raised my radar.
I'm troubled that only a quarter, you know, the 90 million Christians in America, I'm troubled that only a quarter of the people in America are Christians. That's deeply troubling for the future of our nation.
What the, and I can't emphasize this enough, actual fuck are you talking about? First of all, Mr. Schimmel, your statistic is a complete lie. According to the Pew Research Center on Religious Adherence in the United States, 62% of Americans consider themselves Christian. 62%, not 25%. This victimization, this victimhood that conservative Christians try to put themselves in all the time, when they are the dominant religion, and the dominant religion in our economics, in our government, in our culture, to keep playing the victim card. Oh, us Christians, we're so persecuted, when our God has his birthday as a federal holiday. Oh, we're so persecuted, when the Senate and the Congress have Christian chaplains opening up our secular government. Oh, we're so persecuted, when our deity is invoked on our currency and is established in our national motto. Oh, we Christians, oh, we're so persecuted. And why would you be worried about what religion the people of the United States happen to be? Why would that bode ill if America had more Jews or Muslims or Buddhists or Sikhs or atheists or agnostic? What difference would it make to you as a jurist, as a member of the court in a secular country for which no religious tests shall issue for serving in office? What difference would it make if America were 62% Christian, 25% Christian, or 0% Christian? Unless you, Brad Schimmel, ascribe to Christians characteristics you do not ascribe to the rest of us of Americans. If you somehow think that Christians are good people and therefore people who are not Christians are bad people. The last thing I want in any of my justices in any court at the federal or the state level, hell, even the municipal court, I don't even want the dog catcher's religion to have any bearing on how they do their job, how they treat their customers, the citizens of this country, who are of varying religions and no religion at all. This default view that Christianity is good, given all the evidence of all the Christians in office who've disproved that, given the daily barrage through my social media feed of the latest youth pastor who's indicted on some child sexual abuse material charge, on some child trafficking charge, kind of belies this idea that Christians are automatically good. Nobody is automatically good. Nobody is automatically evil. Someone who is aspiring to be a Supreme Court justice should understand that. But since 1954, or was it 53? I wasn't alive at the time, but at the time that we changed our motto to In God We Trust, when we were going through the Red Scare, when we were fearing the godless communists and had to stand up and show, no, we're the good people, the good God-fearing people, from that moment on began the decline of this country. When it began to elevate the worshipers of one religion over everyone else in this country. When we began to recognize Christianity as supreme over all others. It's time to take back our secular democracy. It's time to boot religion out of our secular government. No more chaplains being paid for on taxpayer dime. Return our motto to E Pluribus Unum, from many one, which better signifies what this country is all about anyway. And for God's sake, pardon the pun, could we start taxing some of these mega churches? When I see someone like Joel Osteen with these 16,000 square foot mansions they call a parsonage that they get to live in tax-free, when I see these Houston mega churches that seat 30,000 people while just down the block there are people living in tents, it seems to me that churchy could kick in a little bit. Maybe we could take some of that money and house some of those people, you know, like Jesus would do. The long ago notion that we can't tax churches because then the government would be attacking the church is an anachronism. When we have churches now that are getting as powerful as governments. And especially when churchy wants to play in the secular political pool, when churchy wants to start endorsing candidates, when churchy starts putting out voter guides as to who to vote for, when average churchgoers say they could never vote for a Democrat because they hate God, that's the time that we start taxing the churches. Time for our regular Boycott Idaho segment, the reasons why you should avoid the handmade state, and most particularly, boycott its most famous product, the potato. No red state is more singularly associated with one particular product than Idaho and the potato. They even brag about it on their license plates. So come on, blue states, let's band together and boycott the Idaho potato. Put some economic hurt on those people in Idaho to show them that we will not economically support these regressive red states anymore. And I've got a twofer for you today. On this one, we have a look at how Idaho is affecting child care. You know, most states have these rules with respect to staffing their child care centers. And you have to have so many adults per so many infants, and so many adults per so many toddlers, and so many adults per so many older kids, right? And it's a ratio. And there's usually a complicated formula involved in this where, you know, an infant is worth, you know, 2 points and a toddler's worth a point and a half and a regular kid's worth a point. And then you add up all the points and you have to have X number of adults per how many points, right? So it's complicated. But every state has their formula on this as to how many adults should be in the room in a child care center to be able to get a state child care license to make sure these kids aren't getting hurt, getting into trouble. They have enough supervision. So, Idaho, not being content with being the 41st state in the nation in child care staffing ratios, just passed a new law to make it 45th in the nation in child care staffing ratios. And just in case any of those hippy-dippy radical lefty cities in Idaho, you know, the crazy liberal Boise, thinks that there ought to be more adults than what the state requires, The law bans the localities from setting more stringent standards locally. So there you go. Fewer adults in charge, fewer adults supervising your kids at the daycare, because what about the children? So that's one of the laws that just got passed in Idaho. The other one, the other part of the twofer I have for you today, has to do with a court decision. As you know, after the Dobbs decision, Idaho's trigger law went into effect and pretty much banned all abortion. Yeah, they've got the exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. But as you've heard in this Boycott Idaho segment before, in Idaho, you have to report the rape to police in order to get the exception for rape that you need to abort your child. And in the case of incest, you have to get your rapist permission for police to administer the rape kit. That's right. If you are a teenage girl in the state of Idaho who was raped by your father, you have to get a rape kit before you can get an abortion. And to get a rape kit in the state of Idaho, well, that's a medical procedure. And the state of Idaho passed laws that said you can't do any medical procedure on a child without their parents' permission. And so that means the daughter who was raped by the daddy has to get daddy's permission for the rape kit that proves that he raped her before she can get an abortion. So you know how often that's going to happen. And as for the life of the mother, that's their other exception. We can give you an abortion if it's going to save your life. The problem with that is you have to get to the point where your life needs to be saved before they'll give you that abortion. And you could die in that circumstance. So one of the states, actually the state's largest hospital organization, St. Luke's, which has a hospital in Boise and I think a few around the state. St. Luke's Hospital sued over this because there's a federal law called EMTALA, E-M-T-A-L-A, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. This is a federal law that requires hospitals to provide stabilizing care to pregnant patients. Well, the EMTALA law has run into conflict with these states that have now passed these abortion bans. And so a federal judge, B. Lynn Windmill, ordered an injunction because of this conflict. The federal law says you have to stabilize a pregnant woman who's in danger, in medical danger. But then the Idaho law says she has to be in extreme medical danger to the death's door before you can treat her. So there's a conflict there. Because of the conflict, the judge issued an injunction on Idaho's law and said EMTALA can continue to be followed in every hospital throughout Idaho. So a pregnant woman comes in, where Idaho law wouldn't let the doctor help her, the federal law does. And the judge said, for now, I'm going to put an injunction on the state law, let the federal law continue so pregnant women's lives can be saved. But now, the case is wound through Judge Windmill's court, and Judge Windmill has made a decision. Responding to the argument from State Attorney General Raul Labrador, who said that allowing all the hospitals to continue saving pregnant women from imminent death was too broad because all the hospitals didn't sue over EMTALA, only St. Luke's did. Judge Windmill agreed that only St. Luke's was the party showing harm. Therefore, only St. Luke's should be covered by the injunction. And in particular, only the St. Luke's Hospital in Boise, Idaho. So what that means right now, in the state of Idaho, the handmaid state with over 2 million people in population, that is the 14th largest state in the United States, it covers 83,557 square miles, there is only one hospital in Boise that can perform emergency treatments in accordance with federal law to save a pregnant woman's life. One hospital in the entire state. You're pregnant in Coeur d'Alene and you're having complications? You're 400 miles away from the one hospital that can treat you. You're in Pocatello? You're having an ectopic pregnancy and you need help under federal law? 350 miles away to get back to Boise for that emergency medical treatment. This is why we continue to boycott Idaho, the handmade state. We've seen from states all across the country that since the Dobbs decision and these red states that have gone ahead and criminalized almost all abortion, maternal mortality has skyrocketed. One report, I believe, came out of ProPublica showing that maternal mortality in Texas has increased 33%. In the past, where three women may have died from pregnancy complications, it's now four. Women are dying because of these laws. And in the state of Idaho, they want to make sure even more die. One more time, let's check in on Senator Cory Booker still holding the floor of the Senate.
What kind of man is in our White House that makes fun of the disabled, who lies so much that the fact checkers lose count, that minimizes the pain and the suffering, where you have cabinet secretaries that say, that are billionaires themselves, that say, if my mom misses a Social Security check, but if somebody else complains about it, they're probably a fraudster. These people are not fraudsters. They're hurting. They're afraid. They're worried. For God's sake, this is America. What kind of man is in our White House?
Good on you, Senator Booker. Keep going until your voice gives out entirely. We appreciate the effort. Today in the Radical Rant, I need to tell you the tale of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. This man's an El Salvadoran man who's living in the United States. He was rounded up by our Gestapo. The ICE agents rounded him up. Must have been a terrible gang member, Tren de Aragua, who we never heard of before 3 months ago, but now apparently is the biggest menace facing the United States. Abrego Garcia was rounded up by ICE, flown to El Salvador, put in that gulag of ours, our concentration camp, being run outside of the United States, outside of our legal jurisdiction. Well, comes now the report that it was an error. ICE has admitted that Kilmar Abrego Garcia is not a terrorist, not a criminal, not a gang member, that they made an administrative error. Oops. Oopsie, we got the wrong guy. Picked up the wrong guy. Oh, so sorry. Oops. Man's a father, has got kids who are now living without their father, disappeared to an El Salvadoran prison, and they say it was just an admin mistake. Just an admin mistake. Sorry about your dad, kids. We made a paperwork error. And to add insult to injury, ICE says, well, now that he's in El Salvador, the U.S. courts don't have any jurisdiction to let him go. Oops, we made an admin error, and there's just nothing we can do about it. So, basically, what they're telling us is, if you're a brown person in the United States of America, the Gestapo just might snatch you up, send you overseas to a concentration camp, and there's nothing you can do about it. There is no due process for you. There's no way home. This is the America we're living in, folks, where it is okay to just snatch people off the street with no due process. This man did nothing to warrant being snatched up off the street, disappeared, sent to our concentration camps. This is on the heels of the woman, Marissa Ozturk, I hope I'm getting the name correct, snatched off the streets because she wrote an op-ed. And now you've got ICE agents going through people's social media, finding the visas, the students that are on visa, and going through their social media to see if they said anything critical of Trump or anything critical of Gaza and Palestine. Anything the government doesn't like, they're going to round you up and say that you support Hamas, you support terrorism, and ship you off to the concentration camp. Because freedom of speech and petitioning your government for a redress of grievances doesn't apply anymore to students on visas. And remember, if they can do it to them, eventually they're going to do it to us. So if you're like me and your social media is replete with condemnation of the genocide in Gaza, of the maladministration of Trump, of the fascism we're living under, well, I hope maybe I can save you a seat on the top bunk. Because anything they can do to the kids on visas, to the students, anything they can do to the immigrants, don't you think you're safe just because you're a white citizen like me? Don't for a minute rest on your laurels. Think the fascism isn't coming for you. We've all read the Niemöller poem, "First they came for the trade unionists, but I wasn't a trade unionist, so I didn't speak up. Then they came for the communists, but I wasn't a communist, so I didn't speak up. Then they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't speak up. And then they came for me, and there was nobody left to speak up." That's where this is heading. Fascism is a one-way ratchet. It doesn't back up and give us back rights. It continues to ratchet them down, first against the most undesirables, against the low-hanging fruit. But eventually it comes for the intellectuals, it comes for the artists, it comes for the dissidents of all stripes. We've seen this play out throughout history. Crack open any history book, you know how this ends. It doesn't end in an election. It ends in violence. It ends in conflict. Unless we have some incredible measures to take back our Congress in 2026, assuming there will be free and fair elections. And what's going on in Wisconsin today, that election could have a lot to do with the 2026 election. We got a couple of special elections happening in Florida right now that could get the Democrats a couple more seats. But while we work for electoral solutions, do not hesitate to plan for Second Amendment solutions. Because fascists don't give up their power without a fight. We saw it the first time. We've already seen it. Trump was already defeated in an election, and he instigated violence. He will do so again. He will not leave the Oval Office willingly. We need to all understand this. And others are getting caught up in this despicable act of disappearing our people to foreign concentration camps. I was reading an article about the flight attendants on these flights that are having to take these immigrants to the black site. There's a company called Global X. Their nickname is Ice Air. This Global X is a transportation company that charters flights. And when they were hiring their staff, when they were hiring their flight attendants, boy, they painted a rosy picture of what it'd be like to work for Global X. Oh, Global X is going to be flying charter flights for NBA teams and NFL teams and all these international flights for those, you know, NFL games in Europe and stuff. You're going to meet superstars. There are going to be flights for concerts and, you know, recording artists. You'll be able to meet these celebrities and athletes. Oh, what a fun time you'll have as a flight attendant on Global X. And then these flight attendants find they're not flying any celebrities or athletes. They're flying prisoners, shackled at their feet and their arms. And these flight attendants are wondering, how in the world, if there was an accident, if we had to rapidly deplane, how would we get these 100 people in shackles through the skinny aisles on an airplane? And these flight attendants have been told in no uncertain terms, do not look at the prisoners. Do not make eye contact. Do not speak with them. They got the bait and switch. Found themselves working for the Gestapo. The lies, the cover-ups, all necessary to keep this fascism moving. And we need to do all we can to resist it. If I were one of those flight attendants, I'd quit. But I know not everybody has the option of quitting a job, especially in the economy we have going on and the toilet that it's going into. But every act of resistance that we can put forth, from Cory Booker standing on the floor of the Senate until his voice gives out, to us all gathering on April 5th in our state capitals this Saturday for massive protests, to calling your member of Congress, be they Republican or Democrat, and expressing your displeasure, this all adds up. We can all be a little bit of sand in the gears to slow this down, to bring this administration to a halt. It's scary. We're going to have to definitely get out of our comfort zones. But I know that we can do it. And I know that innocent people like Kilmar Abrego Garcia are counting on us. That's all the time I've got for you this morning. If you're listening in Wisconsin or Florida, make sure you get out to vote today. Vote for the Democrats in Florida. Vote for Susan Crawford for the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons Sharealike Licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com, call my message line at 877-RUSS-420, that's 877-877-420, and reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRuss.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to @RadicalRuss on Venmo, RadRuss on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. And now, take it away, Senator Booker.
And that's why I don't understand why we are playing so small, why we have a president that is playing so small. It's not coming here like presidents of the past and saying, we together, from Reagan to Clinton to Obama, there's a big challenge, America. We together are going to get into the room and do sausage making, Republicans and Democrats, and we're going to find a way to write great legislation. Whatever you want to say about Joe Biden, he was a big president because he didn't try to do things by executive fiat, or as a quote of Donald Trump's I put here, the primacy of the executive, ignoring our Constitution. You know how many bipartisan bills were hammered out here? I see another dear friend of mine, Mark Warner. You know how many bipartisan bills Mark Warner was at the table for? My senior senator who's chairman of intelligence. We did bipartisan infrastructure act when Trump in his first term had infrastructure week every other week. We did a chips and science bill. He's trying to claw back but the money, but we together, I still remember that skiff, that classified skiff where the whole Senate was there and our national security team and Gina Raimondo put forward the crisis in our country, the vulnerabilities, and we came out of that room, we got into our rooms, and we hammered out a great chips and science bill. Decades went by in this body with doing nothing on gun violence. Decades, and courageous people on the Republican side, friends of mine that surprised me, that stood up like Senator Cornyn and said, we're going to do something. I've got my lines, you've got your lines, but let's find the space in the middle. And we did programs, and if you come to New Jersey, the community violence intervention money is lowering murder rates in places like Newark by over 50%, helping to get it done along with our great law enforcement officers. And the incredible thing about that now is Trump is trying to claw back that money, violating the separation of powers, because we decide how we're spending money in America, not the executive. Read the Constitution. And so you and I both know that a big president would come to here and say, let's do some legislation. But John McCain, and I read it to in the middle of the night, but John McCain, it's really important, John McCain, I won't read it, but I will tell it, voted against the health care last time, the taking away of health care for millions of Americans, and said that's because of the dysfunction of this body that we don't come together and do something bigger and bolder to provide better health care, to bring the ideas from both sides and expand the opportunities for Americans and replace the imperfections of the Affordable Care Act with smarter and better things. Not Donald Trump. He's repeating why the mistakes, but not with the ACA, which affects tens of millions of Americans, with Medicaid that affects 70 to 100 million Americans. Why? You ask why? Well, we know why. There's two things that this will achieve. Two things. One, as you said it, it is because he wants to not just renew the Trump tax cuts, but expand them that have disproportionate benefits to the wealthiest. And I wish the wealthiest in the country, names that we know, people like Elon Musk would say, I don't want a tax cut. I wish he would say the truth. I don't need a tax cut. But no, that's one of the reasons. He wants to renew a program that gave disproportionate money, but that's not the only reason. There's a cruelty in what he's doing. It's so offensive. He seems to have no respect for people with disabilities. He made fun of a journalist with a disability once. He seems to have no respect for people who are working hard and struggling but still can't make ends meet. No respect for people that are afraid of his language, of his threats. They think that what he's doing to Social Security might mean they don't have it, that what he's saying to Medicare and Medicaid are lies because he's got more registered lies than any president of my lifetime. They don't think they can trust this president not to hurt them because he already is. And so I was told by my parents, what defines you as a person is not what happens to you, but how you choose to respond. What happens to us as a nation is not what happens to us. They can bomb us from Pearl Harbor to attack us at 9/11. The American character was defined by how we responded to those crises. And yes, there have been major political crises before, but we responded by bending the arc of our nation more towards justice, taking care of more and more people, saying that we belong to each other in America. It is we the people. It is we the people